Hi, this is Janice Torres from Yo Quiero Dinero. If you own or operate a business, whether it's a local operation or a global corporation, partnering with Bank of America could be your smartest move. By teaming with Bank of America, you'll enjoy exclusive digital tools, award-winning insights, and business solutions so powerful, you'll make every move matter. Position your business to capitalize on opportunity in a moment's notice. Visit bankofamerica.com/bankingforbusiness to learn more. What would you like the power to do? Bank of America N.A. Copyright 2024.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Mike N. has supported Independent Tech News directly for about one day. Be like Mike and become a DTNS member at patreon.com/DTNS.
This is the Daily Tech News for Tuesday, April 16th, 2019 in Los Angeles. I'm Tom Merritt.
And from Studio Feline, I'm Sarah Lane.
And from the blazing hot countryside of Finland, I'm Patrick Beja.
And overcast skies from Rat, I'm the show's producer, Roger
Chang. And Roger Chang with the weather. We are going to talk about the PlayStation 5 Wired interview with a Sony employee about what's coming next for a PlayStation console. That is coming. Patrick will keep us up to date on that. But let's start with a few tech things you should know.
We may have peace in our time, folks. This is a big one. Apple and Qualcomm have agreed to settle all ongoing lawsuits. Apple will pay Qualcomm an undisclosed amount and enter into a 6-year global patent licensing agreement with an option to extend for another 2 years. Qualcomm will also supply parts to Apple for several years.
Also known as Apple needs 5G chips. Microsoft announced its E3 event will take place on Sunday, June 9 at 4 p.m. Eastern, 1 p.m. Pacific. It will be streamed on Microsoft's Mixer as well as other platforms.
It's going to be big. They keep saying that as if they wouldn't make it big. Anyway, HTC told XDA developers that its apps disappeared from the Google Play Store, not because they're giving up or going home or not making phones anymore, but because those apps did not meet requirements after a recent change in Google Play Store policy. HTC's Sense Home Launcher, Mail, and Re Camera apps have all returned to the store, and HTC says all the other apps that disappeared will return at the end of this month at the latest.
A teaser on store.google.com now says, on May 7th, meet a new hero, which then links to a page that says, help is on the way. On May 7th, something big is coming to the Pixel universe, with a link to an Avengers Endgame tie-in promotion. The Google I.O. opening keynote takes place on May 7th. I wonder what they have up their sleeve.
What a move.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Wow.
Nice.
Yeah.
What you're hearing are the sounds of people everywhere putting on Bombas socks, underwear, and T-shirts made from absurdly soft materials that feel like plush clouds. Yeah, that plush. And the best part? For every item you purchase, Bombas donates another to someone facing homelessness.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST. Code ACAST.
My business used to be weighed down by the complexities of in-person payments. Then, Stripe Tap to Pay on iPhone came along and changed everything. With Stripe, I streamlined my payment process effortlessly. No more juggling different methods. Just a simple tap on my iPhone and transactions are complete. What's truly remarkable is how Stripe caters to all my customers' preferences. Whether they're using cards, Apple Pay, or other digital wallets, Stripe ensures a smooth checkout experience every time. Setting up Stripe was a breeze, taking just minutes to get up and running. From local markets to global retailers, Stripe helped me expand my reach and grow my business with ease. To learn how Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe can help grow your revenue and reach, visit stripe.com/tapiphone.
Disney to sponsor the tease for your phone announcement.
Well, they got my attention.
Yeah, okay, fair enough. I kind of assumed the Pixel would be announced May 7th, but now we're pretty sure about it. Let's talk a little more about something that might be coming in the Apple Display universe.
Indeed. Yesterday, we passed along some source info from 9 to 5 Mac about upcoming iOS 13 features. Well, sources also tell 9 to 5 Mac that Apple is working on a new feature for macOS 10.15 that lets users send any window of any app to an external display, including an iPad. The feature is reportedly being called Sidecar internally and will feature a new menu that has options for making the window full screen, tilting, and moving to external displays. iPads that support Apple Pencil can be drawn on when used as an external display.
Ooh, that part is cool. You know, but my initial reaction is like, okay, well, I don't know. You kind of like mirror your displays or work them out. Otherwise, I'm using an external display with a MacBook right now. But having an iPad be an external display that could be moved to in the same way that I'm using a regular monitor for, very cool. I don't currently have an iPad that supports Apple Pencil, but especially with video editing and just, I don't know, miscellaneous stuff, I can really see that being a great extra monitor.
Yeah. If anybody who's used the Luna display, which 9 to 5 Mac mentions, probably knows the advantages of this. The Luna display is a little device that, yeah, you can mirror any display to an iPad over Wi-Fi, but the Luna display takes advantage of some of the benefits of directly tying into the GPU. And this would be Apple formalizing that, saying, well, let's just make that happen without you having to use an intermediary device, which I suppose is bad for Luna display selling their devices if this comes, but would make it so that there is another reason to have an iPad and use it in your work setup.
And if you can use the Pencil on the window that is actually a macOS window, I guess it's using functionality that already exists with Wacom and stuff like that. But I wonder what it means for the interaction between macOS and iOS on that level. It kind of puts iPad UI elements, not UI elements, but interaction elements on macOS. I wonder if something will be working weirdly there.
I think it'd probably just use the input info and send it to the Mac. But
Security researcher Armin Sebastian posted Monday that he discovered an exploit in version 3.2 of AdBlock Plus filter system, also used in AdBlock and uBlock. They're similar. Under certain conditions, arbitrary code could be injected into a rewrite filter meant to block circumvention. Sebastian suggested that websites eliminate server-side open redirects or create whitelists and encourages users to switch to uBlock Origin, which does not support the rewrite filter option. AdBlock is saying that it takes this seriously and is evaluating the risk to its customers. Sebastian also says that rewrite filters should be dropped because, quote, it's always possible to abuse the feature.
Yeah, this is one of those situations where AdBlock is saying, yeah, we knew third parties might be able to take advantage of that. We thought it was very unlikely, but we're going to look at this closer and see if maybe we should get rid of it. But we really like the rewrite feature. You know what? Anything that can allow code to be injected, I'm not going to use. So I don't use AdBlock anyway, but I certainly would not use AdBlock if they don't fix this.
Sebastian also said that he submitted what he said was an issue to Google, and Google said, well, it's actually a feature, not a bug. I wonder if they'll change their stance on this now that it's become a somewhat big story.
Yeah, the server-side open redirects, I can see reasons for a website to say, you know, that's on AdBlock. They should fix how they take advantage. There are legitimate reasons for us to have a server-side open redirect. I also get why Sebastian says, yeah, but it's fundamentally less secure. That one I'm willing to take more of a intermediate view on versus the ad blocks. Rewrite filters just aren't secure. Don't use them. Hackaday.com has an excellent article about how 5G service could impact weather forecasting. Let me explain, if I may, although you should read the full article for a better understanding of this. Weather satellites use radiometers to measure microwave radiation, which, among other things, is used to measure the amount of water vapor. You look for reflections or emissions of microwave radiation from water vapor to estimate how much of it is in the air. That's one of the major factors in forecasting weather. The 23.8 gigahertz spectrum is very useful for measuring water vapor and also happens to be very close to where many 5G services will operate. That could lead to faint water vapor signals being lost in a sea of 5G noise if 5G isn't kept narrowly within its band. A lot of times, spectrum is a little messy. It's not as nice and neat as it looks on the map. In fact, DirecTV broadcasts previously have shown up reflecting off water and swamping out other water vapor data. So removing water vapor data could reduce forecast accuracy by 17%, which could be significant. 5G licensees are required to limit their out-of-band emissions, but the frequencies are so close, nobody can be certain how much error there may be. And once 5G services are up and running, companies may be reluctant to want to adjust if there's no immediate harm that they can see, which there wouldn't be. Like, any particular forecast isn't going to be provable to suffer, but it would lower the accuracy of forecasts over time.
Great. Just what we need. Meteorology that works less well because of 5G.
I mean, 17% isn't nothing, but how I know that's not exactly what it how it works one to one, but it seems that meteorology has improved a lot in the past 20 years. Does that mean that we would go back to the level of accuracy from, you know, 3 years ago? That would seem acceptable, I'm guessing. I'm also guessing there are some. Yes, it's not how it works. But
well, yeah. I mean, the thing is, like, yeah, weather forecasts have gotten more accurate over time because we've had more data, and amongst that data is water vapor data. And if suddenly water vapor data disappears, well, they're going to be less accurate. Hackaday points out a demonstration of what the forecasted path of Hurricane Sandy would have been without the access to the water vapor data.
Okay, and so this is a good is a good example.
It would come.
You know, today my weather forecast. I asked my assistant, and she was like 40% chance of rain. Didn't rain, but you know 40%. Okay, you know, it was like whatever. But if it had to do with a natural disaster, then that is actually something that would factor into this in a much bigger way.
Yeah. That's where I was going. I think there are some uses that are not just should I get an umbrella, but could actually have important scientific ramifications.
And it's the kind of thing that a carrier can point out and go, well, show me where the harm was today. Because, you know, okay, so your 60% chance of rain wasn't exactly accurate. So what? Why should I have to fine tune my 5G? I don't know.
Well, a Wired feature by Nicholas Thompson and Fred Vogelstein describes the past 15 months at Facebook. Among the revelations are that Instagram co-founders Kevin Systrom and Mike Krieger didn't agree on the app's future and left Facebook in September because of that. Supposedly, Zuckerberg pulled out many of the ways Facebook sent traffic to Instagram, like ads and linkbacks, in order to keep people inside the, quote, blue app, as they call it. Systrom and Krieger also supposedly objected to hamburger menus, unfolding icons, and other design and functionality issues.
Oh,
hamburger menus,
say.
No one likes hamburger menus.
I don't
Everyone
get why
hates
people
them.
Hate the hamburger menus so much.
Well, I obviously this is not the most important part of this. I think it's because it's bad design because you just put an actual menu instead of designing a graphical UI and you hide it and it's just a text menu. And I think that's bad design. I'm not a designer, but that's how I understand it.
I mean, what's funny about this is that, well, it's not really funny, but it's what's interesting about it is that. Okay, so apparently, you know, if the article is to be believed, the way that it's laying out what the Instagram founders did is that Mark Zuckerberg was funneling traffic back into Facebook rather than giving it to Instagram, even though Instagram has been the most successful app it's ever been and continues to grow at a rapid pace as far as at least users worldwide. So, you know, I'm not totally sure, you know, how much that it was more of a, it's the principle of what you're doing that we don't like and we're out of here. And maybe just the fatigue of having worked at Facebook for some time now. I mean, they, you know, Facebook acquired Instagram, what, in 2012? So it's, you know, it's probably, you know, for as wealthy as you would be as an Instagram founder working under the Facebook umbrella, the blue umbrella, as it were, for this long, you know, to walk away, I don't know how mad you'd have to be or if you just kind of were ready to do it anyway.
Yeah, I'm sure that's part of it. That's a really good thought, which is you're probably half out the door already. And if you're like, well, look, I get that you want us to help bolster Facebook's traffic bleed, but come on, like that's not satisfying for me. So bye. Yeah. I guess I'm going to leave now.
Yeah.
Not going to go away mad. I'm just going away.
And I'm mad.
Yeah. Motley Crue, I believe. Mm. Waymo launched Waymo One, the app for its robo-taxi service in Phoenix. And this is interesting because it's on the Google Play Store and it's finally public. Previously, Waymo One and its companion app were only available to people in its early rider program. We've talked about that in the past. Waymo hasn't given specific numbers on who's using the now public service. Says it's in the hundreds. But there are some limitations. The app has a wait list. So if I download it and I'm in the Phoenix area and I'm ready to go, I, after being accepted, still go into Waymo's early rider program. Then I'm moved into the public service if I don't know, act accordingly. Once in the public service, I can then invite other guests. I can take photos of my ride and, you know, talk about the whole experience publicly, which I'm sure a lot of people want to do. But it is a step forward for Waymo.
You know, in the context of us talking last week about Ford saying, eh, this isn't happening as fast as we might have thought, with Uber pulling back for multiple reasons, Waymo has sort of been the canary in the coal mine to say, okay, is our autonomous cars going to come as fast as we thought? And I'm not sure how to interpret this, because on the one hand, it's making an app public, which is a forward step. On the other hand, it's just making an app public. It's not in any way changing the number of riders in the public program or expanding the service area or anything like that.
I think, you know, it's definitely not a fully launched program. But over the past, I would say, couple of years, we've had to, well, with Waymo especially, it was always like, sure, it's autonomous cars, but it's in a gated community, or but it's limited to beta testers, but it has it. And as things have evolved, I apologize in advance for this terrible pun, but we've had less and less buts, which it's not really a pun, but it says buts, so it's funny. So we've had less and less buts. And at this point, there are still a few caveats, but it's still progressing. I think it's a sign of progress. Even if it's slow, it's significant because many others seem to not be progressing.
Yeah, TVZ Gun in our chat, and I know for a fact he lives in this part of Arizona, says, I live in the part of Phoenix where they've done the Waymo testing, and those vans are everywhere around my town. So they certainly are present on the roads out there in Arizona. Mm. Well, folks, if you want to get all the tech headlines each day in about 5 minutes, be sure to subscribe to DailyTechHeadlines.com. Rich, Sarah, or myself, once a day, give you a five-minute update, keep you up to date. Okay, Sony system architect Mark Cherney confirmed to Wired that a new PlayStation console is coming, and he even detailed some of the things that are in it. Patrick, tell us about it.
Yes, so Mark Cerny is the essentially the hardware architect for the PlayStation 4, which is the most successful console this generation. It was an interesting timing for the announcement because they didn't give anything that is incredibly unexpected. On the contrary, most of the things they're talking about are quite expected. But it's also at a time when it's not going to make a big splash. So it seems to me like they're getting some stuff out of the way for whenever, which is probably going to be in a long time, they're going to announce the more interesting new and different things. So I think there are three different areas in which we can summarize their announcement. The functionalities are backwards compatibility with the PlayStation 4, which was expected, but still good to hear, and the PlayStation VR, meaning your existing VR headset for PlayStation will be usable on the new hardware and potentially get kind of improved functionality because the computing power of the new device is going to be higher. So that's interesting. It will support 8K, so that's really future-proofing, but it will run in 4K for the foreseeable future, and it will still have physical media. So you will still be able to use discs on that device. Again, not very surprising.
Yeah, they didn't make it clear whether it would be Blu-ray or some advanced version of Blu-ray or anything. But honestly, that's, you know, devil's in the details there. I think most people were just concerned, am I going to be able to go buy physical media and play my games because that's the way I prefer to? We've heard from a lot of those sorts of people. So that's good news that they'll be able to. And if it's backwards compatible, presumably it'll be backwards compatible to handling the current discs that you have. I find the backward compatibility part of this the most fascinating because it does imply to me that even though they're going to call this something else, it really is just an evolution of the PlayStation 4. They're not doing such a change of architecture and operating system that they have to port games over. It's following, it feels a little more like a PC evolution of like, hey, it's still a computer. It can still run stuff. So it should be able to run your old games.
And they've been bit by specific architecture in previous generations. PlayStation 2 and 3 especially had very complicated architecture and hurt the backwards compatibility. We knew it was going to happen for both the Xbox One and the PlayStation 4 because they shifted to very PC-like architectures. So it's not very surprising on that front.
I was just going to make a comment about 8K too, because I know a lot of people will just dismiss that as like, who cares? We don't even have 8K TVs, but eventually you will. So that's, to me, that's a sign that they're forward thinking. Although he probably mentions it in this interview to sound impressive to people.
Yes and no. I mean, these devices usually have a lifetime of about 10 years from launch to retirement, and it's not going to launch this year. So it will probably still be around in 2030. And when you look at it like that, you're probably going to be happy that it already is 8K compatible.
Yeah.
The internals are also somewhat expected. AMD custom chip with a Ryzen CPU and Navi. GPU, which is capable of ray tracing, that latest graphics technology that NVIDIA introduced with the RTX series of graphics cards. The 3D audio is a thing they pushed really hard. Cerny talked about it as a big evolution that we hadn't seen in previous generation. The way Wired describes it is as being able to emulate presence. So that seems like a significant evolution of the 3D capabilities of audio. But the thing they're pushing the most is a really fast SSD, which will decrease load times by a significant amount. The example they give in Spider-Man decreases a specific load time from 15 seconds to less than a second. So it's not just your run-of-the-mill normal SSD. It is significantly faster. But he also implies that it could create different design opportunities because you don't need to load any, you don't need to account for the time to load anything into the memory, which could be interesting and could fizzle out.
Yeah, I honestly, the solid state drive stuff is the most impressive as far as changing the performance. It's the least interesting to me though, because I'm like, yeah, of course you should do that. That is absolutely, why would you not do that? The 3D audio is befuddling to me, only because I'm not quite sure what it is, but the way it's described in this interview makes it sound pretty great.
You know, I sorry to interrupt you, Tom.
Yeah, yeah.
I have the same question. If I'm wearing headphones and there is 3D audio, or at least something that seems that way. Okay, that sounds cool. Got it. You know, instead of stereo, there's, you know, but would it apply to like a 7.1 surround sound system if I had that anyway?
So I think the way they, this is pure speculation on my part, but I think what they're implying by this is having more powerful 3D modeled audio systems, engines within the game that won't need to translate to, you know, standard 7.1, but will actually position the audio more precisely in the 3D world
with have fewer, yeah, with more simplistic speaker setups.
I think so, but also they specify that it will, to get the ideal performance in that regard, you will need a headset, and that's how it will shine the most. So I still have questions about that as well. I do want to mention about the SSD that they acknowledge you can already put an SSD in your existing console today, and they're saying that gives you slightly faster load times, maybe a third of what exists now. What they're talking about for this next generation console will be dramatically faster, to the point that it impacts development.
To be because they have a better driver for it then? Because
They'll probably just move to an NVMe style structure instead. So one of the bottlenecks with any PC is the SATA bus. I mean, what's really interesting for me, this whole thing, is how, you know, they're really trying to kind of emphasize the technological prowess and kind of getting ahead of the curve, because I think they want to really entice people who might be having second thoughts as other companies are kind of pushing the game streaming aspect, right? Because you can't do things like 8K on games. You can't do the level of audio fidelity that they're suggesting with game streaming just yet. So I think they're trying to basically position it as a way like, yeah, you've heard about game streaming, but we have a system that's going to be so compelling that you will maintain, if not, you know, put a pre-order, you're going to maintain interest in your eyeballs for the foreseeable, you know, year to come, to kind of slowly build up interest. Because one of the things that I noticed with this entire layout is it's a lot of technical specs, but really little on actual game development, which is, you know, typical. But it just seems like a giant tease. Like, you know, we want to get your attention now.
That's what happens when you leak info to Wired in an exclusive interview.
It definitely is a tease. There's no hugely substantial pieces of information. They do say it's not going to be out this year, so probably 2020 as we had guessed. And they're not discussing cloud gaming. I don't think, what we're seeing here means there's not going to be cloud gaming. I think it's coming, but they're saving those announcements for later, maybe even a PlayStation VR 2. And I don't think they're going to be able to avoid cloud gaming being an important part of that new generation. Of course, they already have PlayStation Now, and they're saying, you know, we're pioneers in that area. We're very committed, blah, blah, blah. I think they're going to make it just as essential to the new generation as Microsoft is already doing with xCloud. So I wouldn't take this to mean they're making this better than cloud streaming, because I think there's going to be parity between the two. If you can have significantly more powerful 3D audio in the home local rendering machine, I think they have to make it equivalent in cloud streaming.
Although I think Roger's got a good point that to justify buying a console instead of just gaming on whatever machine you have lying around, you want to make that machine sexy with lots of specs.
Yes, but if they do end up going with cloud streaming, that's my speculation, you wouldn't need to buy the console. If you don't want to.
I don't think you get the 8K from the cloud streaming. That's where I totally agree.
Sure, but when you do get an 8K TV, maybe by then you will be able to. I don't know. We're speculating.
You need more bandwidth too.
Thanks to everybody who participates in our subreddit. Lots of gaming stories there as well as others. You can submit your own stories and vote on others at dailytechnewsshow.reddit.com. We're also on Facebook. Got a group, in fact, facebook.com/groups/dailytechnewsshow.
Let's check out the mailbag.
Let's do it. Gabor, who says he's writing in from the filthy shores of the Danube River. I always thought it was blue. Gabor says, I have an Echo, a Logitech Harmony, some wireless switches, and a two-year-old boy. He's also wireless since birth. We're talking about, you know, the idea of smart assistants that was the topic of our conversation yesterday. Gabor says, when he was about 6 months old, he used to scream a lot after his bath. Nothing new here. Some music quickly cheered him up. However, I had hard times handling my phone without any free hands. Alexei could give me a helping hand. The favorite is still the Dead South and Hell, I'll Be in Good Company. Gonna look up that song as soon as the show is over. Combined with the Logitech Harmony, it's very easy to mute or switch off the TV when something inappropriate is coming up or we just need a calmer environment. It served as a simple toy too, as my son loved pushing all the shiny buttons. I'm aware of the risks, but they're in balance with the benefits for now.
And then we got a behind-the-scenes email right after that from him that says, I hope my previous email made sense. I was pushed, pulled, dragged, swung, screamed upon, and even climbed on in an effort to turn my full attention towards my beloved son. But I guess what I wanted to point out is that parents often have a hand too few. And yeah, you know what? There's a new Logitech Harmony model out that has Amazon Voice Services built in that just came out today.
Patrick, I assume you can relate.
Actually, for some of it, but I also don't use any voice assistants. I find them completely baffling in what I would have a use for them, including after reading Gabor's fantastic email. So I guess my answer is I don't really relate. I mean,
you relate to probably a kid giving you
pushing, pulling, dragging,
fewer
swinging,
or no
screaming.
Arms.
Yes, that's
all of that. He also said his son chewed up every single remote he could lay his hands on. So that was another good reason to have voice services.
I mean, your son and my dog should go bowling. Well, thanks to everybody who sends us feedback every day. You make our days. And also thanks to Patrick Bejar for being here today. Patrick, let folks know what you've been up to lately.
We just recorded an episode of Pixels, the gaming show that I do every couple of weeks. If you are interested in more details about the PlayStation 5 announcement and other things like the Star Wars game and much more, go check out Pixels on your podcast app. And if you're a more casual gamer, check out MVGB, the monthly video game briefing, which we do with Scott Johnson. It's an easier listen for people who don't need all the details.
Absolutely, folks. Go check it out. And don't forget that if you're not already a member of DTNS, you get all kinds of perks when you become one, including an ad-free feed, special episodes. We just put up a Threatwire cross post talking about the WPA3 Dragonblood vulnerability from Shannon Morse. That went out exclusively to folks today in the Patreon feed. So be like Mike, as we said at the top of the show, and join us. In fact, if you join us at the advisor or master level today, and you stick around for 3 months at that level, you'll get a DTNS 5-year anniversary mug or poster, depending on the level, with art by Len Peralta. That's all available at patreon.com/DTNS.
Send your feedback to feedback@dailytechnewsshow.com. Questions, comments, bring it on. We're happy to have you. We're also live Monday through Friday at 4:30 p.m. Eastern, 20:30 UTC. If you can join us live, it's a lot of fun. You can find out more at dailytechnewsshow.com/live.
Back tomorrow with Scott Johnson. Talk to you then.
Bye.
This show is part of the Frog Pants Network. Get more at frogpants.com.
Diamond Club hopes you have enjoyed this program.
Good night, Rob.
My business used to be weighed down by the complexities of in-person payments. Then, Stripe Tap to Pay on iPhone came along and changed everything. With Stripe, I streamlined my payment process effortlessly. No more juggling different methods. Just a simple tap on my iPhone and transactions are complete. What's truly remarkable is how Stripe caters to all my customers' preferences. Whether they're using cards, Apple Pay, or other digital wallets, Stripe ensures a smooth checkout experience every time. Setting up Stripe was a breeze, taking just minutes to get up and running. From local markets to global retailers, Stripe helped me expand my reach and grow my business with ease. To learn how Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe can help grow your revenue and reach, visit stripe.com/tapiphone.
Hi, this is Janice Torres from Yo Quiero Dinero. From a local business to a global corporation, partnering with Bank of America gives your operation access to exclusive digital tools, award-winning insights, and business solutions so powerful, you'll make every move matter. Visit bankofamerica.com/bankingforbusiness to learn more. What would you like the power to do? Bank of America NA, copyright 2024.